Welcome to Supernormalized. I'm your host, CJ Barnaby, and I like to challenge what's considered normal and invite people just like you to share your story, wisdom, and truth. Each week, I explore deep healing modalities, supernatural abilities, spiritual contact, and the often unexplained whilst leaning into acceptance, personal growth, and real healing. If you're ready to step into a world where your story matters, you're in the right place. Enjoy finally being supernormalized. Today on Supernormalized, we have Peter Fay. He spent over two decades living a life that reads like myth, documenting how inner worlds shape the outer realities that we all move through. His journey is not just a story, but a living experiment revealing how every place, person, and challenge connects with the greater design. Through his unique approach of blending mythic storytelling, photography, and what he calls mythic journalism, Peter shows us how life becomes a sacred stage where synchronicities and archetypes invite transformation. This is a super deep episode, and I really encourage everyone to listen all the way to the end because there's so many nuggets of goodness when it comes to understanding the power of living myth as a part of your life. And how you're actually already doing it without being conscious of it. But when you take control of it consciously, not really control, but like inviting it in, it can make life more enriching and more powerful and a beautiful story. So I'm sure you'll enjoy this one. On with the show. Welcome to Supernormalized, Peter Fay. Peter, you're a myth maker and you guide people towards their own experience of their own myths for their self-empowerment and facing life's challenges. I'm looking forward to hearing your story about this today. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Look, Peter, we've already started having a juicy conversation just about your website. So I'm looking forward to really getting right into this. You've spent over two decades living a life that reads like myth. I can relate to that myself. I've had experiences, like during my Saturn return, I had an experience that was so intense that I actually had Saturn manifest as a human and take me for a walk. Now, and like looking back at it now, I know that was just mind-blowing that that even happened. But these things happen when you actually accept myth as a part of your life. Everything becomes the story. So what first sparked your decision to live life as a myth rather than just a story?
Oh, so that's the question itself. And it's just like, so there's a precursor and then there was like a significant moment, right? So when I was a kid, I was naturally resonant with the language of the Deva, of the elemental spirits of the land, more than I was with people. Yeah. And so while this would eventually grow into the realization that people themselves are made of the Deva, and this would grow into an entire look into the psychology and phenomenology of like, what does it mean to be human? Like, what does it mean to be a myth maker, a myth liver, you know? And I'm going to do a shout out because I actually was in a circus called Mythmaker.
Yeah.
Led by a Viking avatar ally of mine named Herod O'Shea, who lives his own mythic life. And it's interesting that you use that term because, you know, the nature of myth and story really lay at the core of all of our experiences. So when I was a kid and I was having these experiences with the Deva and the elemental forces, I was particularly connected to the rain, to the storms, and to the lightning and stuff like that. And this was, you know, I was always interested in like Greek mythology, Norse mythology, other things like that, the stories of Avalon, anything that related to this other layer of life, this mythopoetic layer of life. And it always felt very true to me, like more true than what I saw in the media and in the films and what people were often talking about. Like it didn't feel like that. What felt like a lot of people were talking about was on the surface, but that the myths were actually you know, I feel the term myth is a misnomer. You know, a lot of people in some cultures, I don't remember the exact one, but myth is considered history.
Yes.
Compared to like fiction. And my work has shown me that myth is actually more foundationally true than what people like. It's, if you're coming from the shallows, you're like, it's a myth. It's like, it's not real. But if you're coming from the depth, you're like that, it's real, the realest of real. And when I, so just, I want to, the progression was that, so starting out with this connection with the nature spirits, I then had an experience when I was around 13 years old. And I was traveling, I was walking through New York City, the Upper West Side, and I had a lightning bolt. Now, I've always had resonance with the rain spirits, with the lightning elemental essences, right? You know, and now in a depth, wouldn't, you know, eventually I would come to realize that these elemental stories, or now you got, you like your Zeus, your Marduk, your Thor, your Indra, right? These are all storm gods, right? They're all the energy of lightning. They're all the energy of the storms. They have a cultural overlay, right? But underneath that, in the more primal places, they're the lightning. And this would eventually lead me to the realization that we were made of the elements, and that, if I may be so bold, we are the gods. You know, we are the goddesses in the current capacity. We're made of the same elements. And so when we project those things outwards into these egregores or these, like, you know, larger things, and put these cultural overlays over them in a more distilled first person experience, like I was having, they're just the elements. Look, so, yes,
yeah,
sir.
That totally resonates with me. Oh, I really get that. Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, man, you know, and so the, when I was 13 years old and I was walking through New York City, I had a lightning bolt come down and it struck the ground right near me. Right. Now, I'd always had like a communion with the rain and the lightning. It's hard to explain in words, just a sense of resonance. And time seemed to stop. And I saw the rain, or slow down a lot. Right. And the raindrops, I saw the raindrops falling like really, 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 really slowly, almost not moving at all. And when I looked through each of the raindrops individually in this like super liminal space, I saw that each person's face was slightly distorted. And I realized that, oh, this is the nature of perspective itself, that we look through the water of our eyes, and the water of our eyes bends the way we see things.
Yeah.
And that bend was actually, because I saw it as the raindrops, was a byproduct of the wind and the rain and the electricity and the gravity and the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And this all kind of downloaded for me. And that was a major, major, major moment where I felt I actually saw the Indric net. Right, which is the, you know, for your listeners that don't know, or is the I don't know if it's actually, it's an Eastern religion, but it has to do with Indra, the god Indra, who is the god, is the king of the gods. And the Indric net is considered to be an infinite net of pearls, where each pearl reflects all the other pearls around it. And it's the basis for the understanding that there is no separation, and that we are all connected to each other, and that we're all essentially reflecting points of view, raindrops.
Yeah.
In exchange. So after that happened, I was, you know, soon after that happened, I'm not exactly when exactly, but I have it in my story as like kind of a point in time. I was in another storm, a kind of a hurricane storm on Long Island, because it's like my place of power. And I had an experience of connection. This is like you with Saturn, right? I had an experience of connection with the muses Calliope, Euterpe, and Terpsichore. Story, song, and dance. And I drew those energies into myself. you know, with the absolute, like, unfiltered, you know, 13, 14 years old, you know, I'm playing Dungeons & Dragons, but I'm feeling it, you know, and I'm just like, all right, man, this is the thing. And I felt the real thing, not in a, like, you know, and as I came to discover over time, you know, just to put that in context, the role-playing games that we play, whether it's Dungeons & Dragons or Skyrim or Baldur's Gate or any of those things, any of those genres, not just like Sword and Sorcery, anything. Right, they are a construct of our own divination into the mythopoetic aspect of ourselves. Like, over time, I realized this because I lived it. And so when I had the experience with the three muses, I drew their energy into me, and it became a grounding cable for my awareness. Because as I would come to discover, my awareness was very untethered in time and space. I would move from one state of being to another uncontrollably. Meaning one moment I would be in like a very radiant, very aware, highly telepathic, highly like Akashic, geometric understanding. And the next moment I'd be drowning with the same onslaught of sensations. The next moment I would be in like extreme anger. Or extreme frustration, I'd be back in it, or I'd be in any number of an infinitude of other shapes. And when I had the experience with the muses, who I recognized to be made of the deva, so the storm devas and stuff like that, I'm having a childhood of reading De Laurentiis's, you know, like Greek mythology, I'm super into that. Into this end of thing, and I'm having this overwhelm of Akashic awareness, right? I'm now encountering the muses as I'm 13 years old, just as a chronology in answer to your question of how did I get on the path, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm coming back to, I'm now having an experience with these three muses, and I was aware that the Greek overlay, Calliope, Euterpe, Terpsichore, you know, the daughters of Mnemosyne, right? You know, the, related to Apollo, did the muses of art, were themselves a cultural overlay on something deeper. And that I was connecting with that deeper thing. Mm. And as I did, and this paralleled the Saturn thing, was I, but it wasn't like a manifest person. I actually met the avatar of the goddess Delirium from the Sandman series. In real life.
That can happen. Yeah, definitely.
Totally. But then I also realized, oh my God, I'm in her realm. Okay. I'm in Delirium. Oh, you know, it's
not, but, fuck.
You know, but this was a whole thing because this was part of the mythopoesis that I designed into the Mythica to track using my photos first with my camera. I had like a Canon 5D, like awesome camera, and then eventually with my iPhone, I was tracking the occurrences of characters on my story to reverse engineer or understand how my story, why my story was unfolding in a mythopoetic way.
Yes.
In order to share that with others in a way that could define what I searched for as the physics of the quest. Like, what is, like, I'm living a mythical life, right? Why, how can I give that to somebody else? That's a very personalized experience.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I've got to say that that sort of experience that you've had and the way that you've mapped it is really powerful. And then if you to look towards modern popular cultural media for an example of that, I'd say, have you seen the series American Gods?
I live the series American Gods.
Yeah, right. So you know.
Oh, dude, that's like the goddess story.
Exactly it, right?
You know, that's, I mean, it's like I tell people that all the time.
Yeah, that is exactly on point for what is this? You know, for if anyone is listening, they're like, oh, I don't understand this. I don't really get it. Watch the series American Gods. There's three. First two are the best. but it really does outline this sort of experience of being a character in a story, but also the importance of being that character in the story and how that you are in that God point when you're living it.
Exactly. That's the thing itself. So when I mentioned Heron, right? Heron is, he's another American god. And the entourage, the pantheon of characters that I've met on my story, Dakota Chanel, Cassandra Banks, Misty Odom, like all of these people, they're regular people like you and I, but they are in a certain realization of that aspect. And this is really important because it's just like, you know, there is no separation. It's not like some of us are like demigods and others of us aren't. Do you understand what I'm saying? It goes back to the understanding that you are the myth.
Yes.
You know, and in the depth of my movement, it's like the American Gods book, as also by Neil Gaiman, right? So American Gods and Sandman series of Delirium, yeah. both by Neil Gaiman. And I'm a huge fan of Neil Gaiman, Alan Moore, Grant Morrison, you know, in that genre.
Basically, magical shamans that write books.
Basically magic books, right? Yeah. And I was so inspired by their work that this was actually at the core of Into the Mythica, was like when I was thinking about what are my major inspirations? And I was like, okay, Jules Verne's Journey to the Center of the Earth.
Yeah.
Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Exactly.
Of course.
Yeah.
And Alan Moore's Promethea. Right. And in Alan Moore's Promethea, that's the one most people don't know. Alan Moore's Promethea is he's a hermetic magician. And he taught hermetic mysticism through the comic book form that he's an adept at, right? In a series called Promethea. So he has this character named Sophie Bangs, who is like going in through the process of embodying the demigoddess Promethea through her art. And now she's going into the Kabbalistic spheres of the Sephiroth, right? Shown in mythopoetic form. And I was like, that's the thing. I'm going to tell my story through my, his thing was, he called it the immateria, through my version of that mythopoetic landscape, the Mythica. Understand it. But the Mythica is real. So the way that I paired it up was that, going back to your first question, just to close that out, I set out on the quest in 2000. I set out on the quest to live the real magical story. I had been a writer. I had been, you know, always into like the energy arts and stuff like that. I had fabulous capacity to heal, like a lot of natural mystical abilities like that. And my devotion to story, song, and dance, right? I decided that instead of playing those games, like playing a paladin or a bard in Dungeons & Dragons, I was like, I'm going to live that. Yeah. Like, that just takes devotion, you know? And I've had a real life experience with the muses. So, and I'm dealing with a real life magical challenge. I'm drifting from one reality to another all the time in my mind. And, right? And so in 2002, I decided, I'm going to go on the quest. I'm not going to play those games anymore. I'm going to leave this alone. Da, 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 da. I'm going to live it. I'm going to live my myth. I'm going to go out on the hero's journey. And that was where I started the chronology of Into the Mythica. I started using my photos to document based on the idea that, was the hermetic idea of that all is mind and that as above, so below. As within, so without. So is based on, it's the idea that your karmic conditions, like whatever's going on in your life, your personality, your current incarnation, all of these things, is creating your outer circumstance. So as within, so without. And that what's going on in the patterns above, this is my perspective, and what's going on in the patterns below, in the subconscious and the superconscious, are manifesting as your life. And that the singularity point of that is where you're at in space, Akashic space, not just outer space. And I don't mean the atmosphere of the planet. I mean outer space, like you're in your room. I'm in my room. My piano's behind me. Like that's outside space. Inside space, I'm having an experience. You're having an experience. And I wanted to map out where those territories met. Because I wanted to get to a more magical world. And I was like, how much of that is internal? How much of that is external?
I'd like to make a point that magical world exists whether you believe it or not.
Of course it does.
right? And you're always living it, and you're always casting future spells, which you live, whether you believe it or not. It just happens.
Yeah, it's physics.
Yeah, it's physics. But the reason that we have these people controlling our reality right now with narrative and story is because they know that, right? And they know that if they control your narrative and story, they can make you walk down a certain path, but you can take control of that path too.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, but this is the crux of it. Yeah. It's like, it's the thing itself, you know, how do I put this? Because this is really at the core of the idea of willful conscious self-development.
Yeah. You mean co-creation, right?
Co-creation, yes. Yes, but then co-creation would be a subtler nuance of the idea, yeah. I create my reality into I'm in a relationship with the larger controlling force, which then becomes about who is the doer. Like I went all the way with this, CJ. Like over 20 years of documentation, it became a deep investigation into, like when we say the law of magical world exists, the magical world is the ordinary world seen at depth. It's not supernatural. It's only people's position in space.
It's the exact point of my podcast.
Totally. Super normal. Yeah. You know, and it is, because it's just like, and that's what I was on about with the Mythica. You know what I'm saying? If you go on the about page in the Mythica, you get like a little slider where I'm showing like a graphic. It's an overview of like a forest. And then you blend with the slider and you can see this energetic landscape. And what I'm saying is that the condition of your chakras, the rainbow of your chakras, energetic, electromagnetically, ordinary, seen at depth, create your inner landscape, which then defines how you see your outer landscape and has a relationship of, so for example, when I, okay, so going back to it, right? So when I met Heron Oshii, who is the leader of the Mythmaker Circus, and he is a full-on Viking avatar, but he lives it. You know, he lives right by the Valhalla Mountains in like Canada. You know, he travels around like with his wolf. He runs a band, a circus. And Brent, I've always seen him as like carrying people from one realm to another, you know, on this like green school bus that he affixed a couple of stag's horns to for like a circus of, you know, that kind of performance. Oh, yeah, man. He's all in. I've always loved that about him, you know, because he's all in. And then you've got to be all in. Yeah. To be why? Because the controlling narrative, it is. It's like a spell it is a spell.
It is a spell.
Being used to manipulate you in service to commerce. But it's not enlightened commerce. It's an exploitive commerce.
Yes.
You know, and that's a lot of people, they, you know, it's like, our lives are made of stories. The stories that repeat in our mind, and then as we get into the depths of healing, those stories are born from repetitive, unprocessed traumas inside the body and the layers of consciousness. So you're being influenced by these patterns inside the body, which are karmic, that come from traumas, right, or experiences just in general. Right? It isn't just traumatic experiences that we're addicted to or entangled with, like, I loved this moment in time, I'm going to keep revisiting it, you know, as compared to, oh, I don't like that moment in time, but I'm going to keep revisiting it. They're both, we're bound to them. They appear in the mind, they come from here. They appear in the mind. And then they affect our viewpoint, they affect all these things. At the same time, people are constantly trying to influence us with their desires. So now they are in every way possible, whether it's the happy music when you're shopping, or it's like, have you ever noticed that like email is, there's no personal email. Every every email is some fuck trying to sell me something.
Exactly.
Right? Have you heard about this? You know what I'm saying? I don't want you to miss out. You know, like, the opportunity. What?
Yeah, time is running out.
Time is running out. You must act now. Otherwise, you've lost it forever. At least until we bring it back again in a couple months, knowing that you're so distracted that you won't realize that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Keep those anxiety levels raised.
Oh, my God. It's all about the cortisol. So, all right. So just to put this in context. So when I was living in Lake Tahoe, I lived in Lake Tahoe and I studied magic in Lake Tahoe with an oracle by the name of LeFay. And when I was in Lake Tahoe, I had the sense that I was living in the vibrational undercurrents of the Celtic, the Greco-Roman and the Norse mythologies. I mean, Lake Tahoe, because I realize you're on the other side of the planet, right, is a beautiful place in California that is a ring of mountains that hosted the Olympics. Ski Olympics, just to give you an example, that is around a beautiful, beautiful, mostly pristine lake that, you know, you could actually see into the depths of because it was so clean when it started. It's gotten a little polluted now, but like, you know, super clean. And you're surrounded by a ring of mountains, by the High Sierra Mountains, and you get huge amounts of snow. There's bears. It's a small town, huge tourist trade because, you know, it's the Olympics and big money. But the locals, right? It's a great place. And around the western side of Lake Tahoe is a place called Emerald Bay. And Emerald Bay has the only small island. The Lake Tahoe is very large, and then you've got the small island. It's the only one there in the bay. And on top of it is like a tea house made of like stones. Now, when I was traveling on the western shore of Lake Tahoe, I was there with my wolf. So when I was studying magic at the academy, I actually did a spell that summoned me like a giant, like a dire wolf, right? A very large wolf named North, who was my companion for 10 years. And where I had this whole sense of being in the Viking energies. So then I go down to the lake shore. This is by Emerald Bay. And I suddenly discover there's a Viking. Like it looks like a dragon, like on a. And I shot a picture of it, of course, because I'm a diligent mythic journalist, right? You know, yeah. And so it turns out that this woman, I forget her name was, but they had a house built or imported a house in the Viking style, right there on the edge of the water with the full on house, and I think the tea house was associated with them. And I'm like, right, American gods. Mm-hmm. The energies in the stones, the energies of that were there, and the people brought them there, and that energy was present. And so Tahoe has that quality.
That's cool.
Isn't that cool? And yeah. at a similar moment during that moment on the quest, right across us, a lake is here. And here's the it's a 50. 50 goes like up north and south on the west side of Lake Tahoe. The lake's on this side for me, right? If I'm coming from the north, from Lake Tahoe. And if you go down, here's where that Viking house was. But if you go this way, there's a set of stone steps that go all the way up into the mountains. And I went there with this woman, Yvonne Eisenberg, who I studied the magic with. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm climbing the steps. And I had the Norse energy again. In the land. So then when I'm there with my wolf, I look out over the lake and I have a full-on vision of the celestial nature of things. Like that was like a PowerPoint, Emerald Bay, for me. The stone steps to the heights, it was like looking in Odin's chair, right? And like coming down with the Viking house right there. I'm there with my wolf and I'm just like, nothing's changed. I'm with my wolf. I'm having experiences. And it's physical. It's not just I'm having a dreaming.
No, you're like, living it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so yeah.
A lot of people would sit back and go, oh, no, he's just tripping. But no, he's not. I've experienced this. When you're living in that state, it's reality. It's not I'm experiencing this and I'm just making it up. I'm experiencing this as a reality.
Totally. I mean, it really comes down to like one's stance, for example. Like I'm too much of a Viking to be like, you know, it is real. You guys, I mean, I just want you to see this. I'm like, no, dude, you guys are wrong. Your perspective is small. You don't see it because you're not living to the depths of yourself.
Yes.
And so for me, my thing would be to turn it around and be very assertive about that because I've lived it. It's like having documented it with like years on the quest. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, I'll show you something, right? So,
yeah, sure.
At one point, I met this group of, you know, people who were like really reminded me of the Elvish signature, and they're living at the base of Mount Elphinstone, also in Canada. And I had one of them make this for me.
That's wild. Whoa. It's like light leather armor.
Oh, it's totally like light leather armor. Like made of like sacred stones.
Far out. That's totally cool.
Isn't that great? Made of sacred stones that were shaped for me by a crafter named Chris and, you know, who was living at the base of Mount Elphinstone.
Far out.
Mm-hmm. And well, it was one
obviously of the dude's an elf, you know.
Right. Obviously. He's just like that, you know? And this same guy ended up like making like a sacred architecture, temple builder, right? And he was making sacred architecture for the Shambhala Festival in Canada. And I'm having this whole experience of like, wow, we are living myth. But in order to encounter that myth, you have to encounter it going back to this. As above, so below, as within, so without. You have to encounter it at the moment in time and space, at the dimension of time and space when that is happening. You have to meet those other people. Otherwise, it won't happen.
Yeah. Look, I've got to say, you've got the name Peter Fay. Was that your birth name?
You know, my rebirth name.
Rebirth name. That's totally fine too.
Yeah.
And I noticed you've got the red hair as well. I mean...
Oh. That's my birth hair.
Yeah, I'm going to say too then, like, you know, you've got to have some heritage back from the muses and the storytellers to have that hair.
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's totally the thing. No, it's the thing. I actually traveled to Scotland with a couple of the lads, a couple of other bards, with this bard, Noah McLean, and another bard named Patience Yanderling, who I had met in the realms of fairy as they intersected with Oregon. So what had happened was in 2009, right, I had left Lake Tahoe and I traveled the thing and I was traveling around and I had, no, wait, I'm sorry. It was 2007 when I traveled again with the myth maker, Heron's Circus. And Heron's, and also I was led from Lake Tahoe to where I got the cloak, the coat, Mount Elphinstone. Then I traveled east to Winlaw to encounter, I'm sorry, I'm mucking it up a bit.
That's all right.
Sorry. In 2006, I went to a festival called Earth Dance in Northern California. At Earth Dance, because I was a professional fire spinner, right? I was playing with two swords, not sharp, right? Just little strip of a wick to put fire in, right? And I had met another person wielding two swords, and we kind of played, danced a little with each other. That was Heron Oshii. Heron invites me to like a little area away from the main festival where a number of buses had come together in like a caravan. And there was like this whole like inner market of like, you know, festival, like people like selling their wares. And it was the Mythmaker Circus was there. And I got invited into this whole circus thing by Heron, who was in the process. Like he would find other magical avatars and invite them to be a part of the circus. So then I happened to have like, I had a lion mask because lion tone was really strong. So I had a lion mask made for me by this guy, Carl, who I... CJ, you're really holding the vibe. I'm so inspired to talk about stuff with you. Great.
I'm glad. No, that's totally cool too. Wild. Wow. Okay. For the people listening, he's showing us his lion mask.
This is my truth.
Wow, that's totally powerful. Yeah, yeah, cool.
Oh, it's super powerful. You know, and I was going on a whole thing because I was realizing my own totemic energy as a lion.
Yeah.
You know, and also the rabbit, which was interesting. You know, so you're consuming yourself. But so I had the mask with me, and then I met Heron, and I was like, oh, I've got this mask and this thing. And he invited me to be a part of their show, 2006. In 2007, I traveled and I left the mountains of Tahoe. And I went to Elphinstone because that was the most magical community that I'd seen thus far, right? Small bunch of people, you know, just of that tribal energy. And from there, I traveled to Winlaw, right near the Valhalla Mountains, where I joined Heron's Mythmaker Circus. In the Mythmaker Circus, we then traveled and went to Vancouver, and then we came down to Oregon. So from Canada to United States, we came down to Oregon, and in Oregon, being with the Mythmaker Circus led me to something I didn't even know existed, which was an event called Fairy Worlds.
What? That's cool.
So I'm like proof of concept.
Yeah. Would you say then, like looking at this, that for a lot of the, I don't want to call people normies because it's almost like derogative, but people that are muddled up in sort of normal reality, their experience of this that can touch on it, that can also bring them into it, is something like Burning Man.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I call Burning Man the city of dreams because, you know, the idea, because when you're in, and Burning Man's actually, Burning Man is the most unveiled example of the nature of divination and manifestation that I have encountered in the mortal plane.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're wandering through the playa and you're having an inner experience going through an outer landscape, but somehow you're arriving in moments with other characters embodied in some pantheonic way in whatever state of mind they're in.
Yes.
There's like a larger geometry there, and you're some kind of an art installation that you've encountered in the swirling dust storms of the desert, right? Yeah. Where you can't see, and then suddenly you can, you know, and then all of a sudden you're by this art installation or something, you're surrounded by this cast of characters, and it is like completely reflective of where you're at in your journey, physically, like you're going through a dream landscape.
Look, I went to Burning Man back in 2004, and I'm on the dance floor with my friend. We're having a really good time listening to a DJ I knew from San Francisco that That's ended up. And we were just thinking, oh, we'll just go back home. You know, we'll go back to our camp. We're cutting straight across the playa, windstorm, can't see anything. And it's just hilarious for us. We're having a good laugh to ourselves. And I get hungry, and I say to him, I really want vegetable tempura right now. I just have this feeling for it. I don't know why, but I want it now. And he said, yeah, I don't know why you're saying that, but I can feel that too. We ride another 3 kilometers, and out of the dust appears a little caravan that's actually got a man there. The caravan looks like a Japanese traditional stand. He's dressed in traditional Japanese clothing. We go up and he's cooking, and I say, what are you cooking? He says, vegetable tempura. Do you want one? I was like, no. it happens like that, right?
Right. And that's the thing. And my whole thing was just, so I've gone to Burning Man 9 times, right? I haven't gone recently because, you know, when I got back from the quest, I was in another aspect of the myth. You know, when I got back from the quest, just to bounce around a little bit in 2022, I had nothing. I had been living in what I call Carnia, the magical parking lot of Narnia when you live in your car. And,
Carnia, love it.
And so it was like it was a 30-year-old Subaru, right? And when I got back, you know, I was exhausted. You know, I'd given all to the quest, and it was like I started out as a young man, and then I, you know, it became a knight, and then I became like, you know, a king, essentially. Like I gained the king emperor position in the tarot. And then when I came back, I was just, you know, like, and I had to take a couple of years, that was 2022, to recover and build the Mythica website, collating the 20 years of my observations and so on and so forth. And so the, but bringing this back to fairy worlds with the Mythmaker, right? And so I'm there. And in 2006, when I had first encountered Heron with the Two Swords at the Earth Dance Festival, now this was a year later, and I've arrived at this place called Fairy Worlds, and I'm like, oh my God, because the tradition that I had studied was a mixture of Lakota and fairy traditions. And I was always very identified as a paladin of fairy. I was having encounters with the nature spirits. I was a devotee of, like, in that thing, and realizing I was living being like a real life Dungeons and Dragons type paladin of bards. It's, you know, the distinctions aren't real in real life, aren't really like there's a role play game. I've got a little paladin, I've got some bard, I've got some magic user, you know, it's like that. But everyone's like that. But for me, I was very much devoted, devoted. Like, a lot of the challenges that I've had on the quest have been from extreme discontent and question into God's goodness, yes, here in the Kali Yuga, you know, and like other things, you know. So when we talk about the manipulative tendencies of corporations or the oligarchies or stuff like that, you know, these are they're a byproduct of the Kali Yuga. Like everybody's messed up. So it's kind of like, it isn't just about the individuals, you know, that you might have a criticism about because we feel they're acting in an inhuman way, right? Mm-hmm. It's the understanding that everyone is acting in an inhuman way because the environment itself or the age itself is jostled.
Breathes that.
Yeah, breathe that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's extra hard to be noble at this time.
Yeah. Considering your path and all that you've experienced, how do you balance living in the mythic without losing touch with everyday practicalities? What do you do for grounding it? I mean, I know you actually write the story as well, but what else do you do to actually keep yourself sort of bridging the worlds without going too far into one or the other?
You know, it's funny. I'm in an interesting place right now because when I was, part of the grand human challenge that I've lived very deeply, and what everyone lives to one degree or another, it tracks back, and this was part of what my understandings of the mystic art showed me, it tracks back into where we're at in consciousness. You know, and so, for example, my story has been characterized by, like, if someone were to ask me, like, I'm not a guru, I'm a seer. And a guru is like, you know, that they know the exact mechanism of the thing, that give you a kriya or a repetitive practice that you can do biochemically. They're going to give you some sound vibrations to do to change your consciousness. A seer sees things and has some degree of alchemical understanding based on seeing, right? So for me, because I've primarily been a seer, I may be moving in the direction of guru, which is like seer to alchemist to guru, right? But it's like my strength has been in perceiving. So for example, when I walked up the stone steps and I was there in the Odin seat and I was there with my wolf, with Yvonne, and I was like, right, I'm living the myth of, like, I'm an adventurer climbing the stone steps, having an experience where I'm now looking over the lake and I'm seeing the cosmos. You know, where the lake embodies the liquidity of form, going back to the raindrops, right? And where the mountains are like the grounding of that, but that you have to get to the heights or the depths to really see that, either really deep in the mushrooms, ayahuasca, really high in the mountains, meditation. And where my whole quest has been about grounding the crown and the ground. So my tendency is to see things on the level of the gods. My difficulty has been the repetitive things that people do to maintain the body and to do this and to do that. So my natural state would be much like the violet of your backdrop, right? Would be like, we are the gods and this is this and this is that. And the really understanding that ground state. So when I came back from the quest, I had lived this truly mythical journey. But, you know, I was not really together in the earth plane. You know, it's just like I had been, I didn't have a problem living in Carnia because I was, being that my devotion is to story, I would work at the library, and the library was sacred to me. You know, like my experience of a library is very deep because it's connected to the Akashic Library, which I'm an ambassador of. So it's like, it's a very deep, even now, living in Menlo Park, I literally live across the street from the Ravenswood Library, like at a place called the Ravenswood, as in like Union and Eugen, right? It's like that, you know, but it's been like that. And there's this quality of where is the line between our thought and the manifest reality? So for me, when I came back with like nothing, you know, in terms of material possessions, but everything in terms of the jewel of awareness to Lake Tahoe. And I was received by the other member of the Academy, Cassandra Banks, who I'm living with now, who's a fabulous seer, and she offers divinations on the Mythica. And I'm also an excellent seer, but my focus is more on the world rather than I don't usually go into the, I'll go into someone and help them see their mythos. But I'm not so much on the, let me give you an individual reading in this moment. I'm more on the, like, what's your path? How does it relate to the world? You know, it's more macro. And, but so for me, I had to get really grounded in order to bring the Mythica forward. So I was living in the deep mythos and have now spent 3 years living like in the South Bay where it's Menlo Park, Palo Alto. I call it Startopia because it's like everybody here has a startup. Right. This is a diff. If you don't know, because I assume you're on the other side of the world, right? If you don't know, Palo Alto is where the headquarters for Facebook Meta is, where the headquarters for Google is, where the headquarters for Amazon is, where the headquarters for
this area really does need a new myth.
Oh, totally. Totally. No, I live in the right place. The oligarchy. You know, it's just when people go on about politics, I'm just like, no, man, we have the cash shield, the capital action security help. It's like an energy shield that like nothing going on in that thing. It's all reliant on like the node of what's going on here. Nothing bothers anything. All the time. I live in the center of the empire.
Yeah.
Right. And, but the thing is that this is actually like a super erudite place. Like Stanford is here, you know, we're just south of San Francisco. San Francisco is big consciousness. And it's like, what was interesting is that, so for me, grounding out, getting the Mythica going, building a product set, getting the interviews going, building the infrastructure for that, building the AI for that, creating the images for that has consumed me. So I've been very much in the trying to land in the world, not trying to maintain the magic. And I've realized that by being in this, it has disconnected me from the magic a bit. And that now, even as I have the conversation with you, it's a reminder of, wait, I've got my Elvish armor. I've got my lion thing. And I'm having this whole experience of the universe is reminding me through the process of me telling the story. But it's in the context of I went on the quest. It was a super ordeal. I came back from the quest. And then I was like taking on the patterns of the entrepreneurship in order to facilitate delivering the myth to the people. So my long game is delivering things so that I can be more blatantly in the magic, but also honoring the people, the places, and the events in that world, which brings us back to, remember Network, Faye Dunaway? Remember that one, right?
Yeah,
powerful for me, because I had a moment like Legolas. Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. That movie changed my life as well. Even at a very young age when I watched it.
Same. Because I saw myself as I'm like Howard Beals. You know, I'm like the guy who's like going on and on in the rainstorm. And then he gets that speech by God. Who was it? Who was the actor? It was so good. Where he meets that guy who's the titan of the industry, and they just have that thing. Is like you have upset the powers, right? And but it's like, and I was like, wait. What if Beals, the guy who has all the, he's like talking truth, right? What if he owned the network? That's what I did.
Yeah.
I didn't experience like Legolas from Lord of the Rings, right? I was like, there is a fell voice on the air. You know, when I felt stories being used intuitively, I was 7 years old. I felt stories being used intuitively to crush the people.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely. I was like, that's exactly what's happening. You know, you look at the, you know, the stream of, you know, for want of a better word, bullshit that is actually coming out as news continuously. We've got things to be worried about continuously. AI is going to destroy everyone and take everyone's life, you know, you know, and yeah, exactly right. And, you know, robots are coming and, you know, it's just bullshit. But this is the story they tell to keep everyone in place.
Oh,
if everyone knew their power, they would have none.
Right. But then gaining your power, then that becomes, it becomes a real, now you're looking at the crux of what is divination. Like, what is manifestation? You know, like, why did you have the, I want some vegetable tempura. And then, like, I had an experience of Burning Man where I was there with my friend Patience, not Patience Yanderling, another Patience that I knew from Kauai. And we were sitting there, we had like 10 people, and he was trying to make some food, and I think he had like a potato. Right, he's like trying to cut it up for people, right? And I'm just like, this is a fool's errand, right? But then suddenly, this girl in like a banging outfit drive comes up on a bike, and she just whips out a thing, and she's like, "Hey, somebody order a pizza," and Patience, without missing a beat, was like, "Right here, right."
Oh, I love that. I love
and
that.
And so she comes in and she brings a pizza steaming hot. Like it just came out of some, I don't know where they had that. They had to have a pizza oven. They had to have a pizza oven. And steaming grease. You're in the desert, right? And it's just like, she comes out and she's got this thing. And on the picture of the box, I don't know if you know the artist R. Crumb. You know, because I love comics, and it shows like one of those classic kind of R. Crumb things where like kind of like a nerdy looking guy is like there, and there's like this woman, she's got like her foot up like this, right? And she's like holding up a pizza, and he's like looking up at her, probably up her dress, right? And but she's totally on it, right? She's got her foot on him. And it just says, "Devil Girl Pizza. If you don't like it, you can..."
That's perfect. Oh god, that's so Burning Man. That's so Burning Man. Yeah. But that sort of stuff happens all the time when you're in that mythic space.
It does. But then the question becomes, you know, you have to have like a realistic look at, you know, because I thought that I could just live in that world all the time. But, you know, it's just like, no, man. And I was hardcore about it. Like, I was in the car. I was living in Carnia. I was on EBT. And I used to have a lot of money. Like, I inherited a lot of money. So I had, you know, when I went on the quest, I had inherited $1 million. My father had died. And I had taken it as, you know, I had always considered myself, I mean, I've lived the life of a prince. Like, you know, when I was, my father was very wealthy in New York City. And we used to go for, like, rides in the carriages. They have these stagecoach carriages in Central Park. And, you know, I was very blessed in that way. We drove in a limo all the time, right? And when he died, I had inherited from the insurance settlement about $1 million. And I used that to fund the quest.
Yes.
And then in 2016... actually, late 2015, that was gone. And I got a thing from the divine that was like, okay, you're on donations now. And then I was on donations from 2016 to basically about now, you know, or at least the last year or so, where, you know, I was just, that was it. I mean, everything was shut down. Things I tried to do that would make money didn't happen. Trying to visualize things like that didn't happen. My mind didn't have, I was just on the quest. I had to surrender to the larger sense of things, which again is like, creation.
Yes.
Not just my will or my imagining of separate will, like, but this larger thing. And as that came together, there was the recognition that you know, in order to live in that world, you know, you're it's not like you don't live in this world. It's not like the kind of elvish clan that made the leather armor for me. It's not like they're not actually living in the world as people, you know, and it's, or if, you know, the people at fairy worlds, you know, and who are a number of these like incarnates who are like living in various things of relationship with the goddess and the fairy realms and everything from like the fairy congress in Twisp, Washington to fairy worlds or to a lot of the people in Portland or the Eugene, you know, Oregon or Ashland, the goddess temple of Ashland, like all of these places in Oregon that I visited on my quest and mapped out had these people who were living this mythopoetic life, like my friend Grail, who runs the goddess temple of Ashland. Like she goes to, what's it called? England, the stone.
Stonehenge.
What's that?
Stonehenge?
Glastonbury
Festival. Yeah.
Yeah, but she goes to Glass and she gives these like teachings. Or Dakota Chanel, who's this water priestess that is a good ally of mine. She like takes women on journeys to the pool in France that the Magdalene was said to come out of, you know, and she teaches them to channel their feminine powers. Like, but these are real people, like they're living real lives. And that I feel that crucial understanding that it's not fantasy, it's reality seen at depth, that it's super normal, you know? That's right. I plugged your show while on the show.
thank you.
Totally. You know, and it is, because it's like, these are real people, you know? Like when I got back from the quest, I mean, I've been like, you know, Ubering people around and I had nothing. It was like the king coming back from the quest. Like I have the jewel of the realization of the world tree and the grove of life of the Mythica. And that's part of what I'm on about, is that what we talk about in the Kabbalistic tree of life or the Norse world tree or other things like that is the grove of life, the web of life, is that we're all actually interconnected. We're all a part of the planet. We're a part of the mycelial weave. We just don't realize that because the mind is distracted by shitty media, but it's just like in reality, we're all a part of it. And the, you know, when I got back, I had nothing. And, you know, my car, the 30-year-old Subaru, died. She was just done. It was like the Blues Brothers. I love that so much. You know, the car just falls apart when they get to their destination, right?
Yeah, it's exhausted.
And I say that a lot because it's the story points for me. And so I rented a car to give people ride shares because I didn't have any money and needed a car. That was like $400 a week to rent the car. It's like 16 hours of work, right? And so plus or minus tips, right? And so then I was just doing that. And then I eventually just got a car. I got this awesome car. And now I'm setting up my mobile studio to go to the festivals and interview the characters and do the thing. But what I'm saying is that, you know, we all live in the real world. There's just layers to the world. Like you got to make your rent. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, I built out all this infrastructure of the Mythica and something kept making me incoherent when I tried to move forward with things. And I realized it was of a timing higher than myself. So it's like to answer your question of balancing the magical crown chakra realization of the depths of who we are and the very like, you know, okay, I got to pay the bills. I got to do this. I got to do, you know, like this. I got to be mindful of this is, it's challenging. You know, I mean, my thing, and this is the way I move forward with that. This is my attempts to answer your question, right? So my attempts to move forward with that have been to create a network whereby I'm giving the magical world to the people, which is then giving it to myself.
So it's like you have a long-term plan here by the sound of it, like a long game.
Yeah. I mean, because I always wanted to give people the magic. And I realized that one, you have to understand what's going on. And that's a journey. Because going back to the beginning of our conversation, you're awesome, by the way. I hope I'm not taking
up.
I just like
No, it's great. No, this has been right on point for everything I need to look at as well. So it's an excellent conversation and I'm actually looking at the time going, oh, we're getting close to the end, but we've barely scratched the surface. So I think this is going to have to be a series.
Yeah, we can always come back. Yeah, we can always come back and go into it, you know? But just to say, so when I met Delirium, in New York City in 2002. I literally, okay, brownstone, I'm walking through the streets, I'm in like this crown chakra fugue, I'm moving from one space of being to another, and I met this woman, half shaved head, English accent, delirium, like from the Sandman series. And I'm like, and I was feeling myself as an avatar of destruction, like that wave of Shiva, because I do have awareness that there's no separation, and that actually destroys the illusion by definition, which can be unsettling for people, but it's part of my function. It's also creation. And so, but when I met delirium, I was like, ooh, I'm in the realms of delirium. If I'm meeting her for real, then I'm in delirium.
Yes.
But then, so then I was like, okay, what's going on? I need to get from delirium, this relates to the character, back to delight. Because in Neil Gaiman's series, who also wrote American Gods, right? Delirium used to be delight. And I realized that, you know, anything that any artist creates, any artist, including myself, is a reflection of the patterns of the age. And so he's having, my interpretation was that that was a divination into these primal forces that affect everyone's life. And the movement from delirium back to delight, for me, was the microcosm of the movement from the Kali Yuga back to the Satya Yuga, from the age of incoherence, the age of darkness, the age of like people manipulating you, just messing with you all the time, hard to stay noble, your own thoughts are working against you, you have all these karmic debt. That's what's going on right now. I'm not trying to be not hopeful. I'm just trying to be realistic, like a Viking
about.
You know, and it's just like, that's going on. But we want to move to delight. We want to move to the natural exuberance of being human. But this isn't easy. I mean, even for myself, I'm like, because I'm coming from the crown chakra into the root chakra, it's been like an ongoing, this may be humble, right? An ongoing journey into like the, you know, because, you don't always get what you want. But sometimes, if you try, you get what you need.
Yeah, I think we've all experienced that, where you actually manifest your negativity and then go, oh, okay, I just woke myself up again.
Right. And it becomes this whole idea of like, what is just in our mind and what is the way we're interpreting the conditions through our mind? Like, I was just like, law of correspondence, I haven't gotten the mythic out there. I'm ride sharing for people. Oh, I'm a failure. But then on another way of looking at it, it's like, no, dude, you came back, you did a Herculean demigod level task of like mapping the Akasha, right? And now you're delivering it to the people in perfect timing. Was that perception and self-hatred, was it real?
Yeah. Well, Peter, look, we've come to the end of this episode, I'm afraid to say, because I try to keep it around about 1 hour. But as I said, this is going to have to be a series, because I've barely scratched the surface of the questions I wanted to get to. And I know we've got a lot more to say. So,
oh, my God.
So I want to say this before we go. How can people find your work now, and where would you encourage them to start?
So you can find my work on intothemythica.com. That's like into the mythical world, like into the mythical with an L, take off the L, into the mythica, mythica.com. And I also have an Instagram, and I'm going to start a whole thing of social media in my coming back from the quest, getting a car, just about to do it, setting up the thing. I'm just about to start my own podcast and do all these things. So, you know, I say to people, come check out what I'm saying. I'm going to be teaching the physics of the quest. I'm going to be interviewing characters from the world of the Mythica and providing like comics courses and content. And if you show up, like, I don't know when you're publishing this podcast, but I'm like right at the launch thing right now. So there should be lots of stuff for you guys to check out.
Awesome. Excellent. All right. Thank you very much for your time, Peter, and all that you've shared. It's mind blowing. I'm going to put those links down in the show notes. And I look forward to our next episode. There's going to be so much more to talk about. Like I said, I barely scratched the surface on the questions here. So yeah, this is wild. Thank you.
I'm super into it. You're awesome. Let's set up another time. We'll get it done. Send me an email. We're on it. Yeah. We're connected. We're part of the resistance. So Or the acceptance, one of them, I'm not sure.
it's the same thing, different sides. You know. All right, okay. I'll say goodbye to the listeners. Wow, that was like mind-blowing to talk to Peter just now and exactly on point for what I need to hear, because I've lived this mythic life myself in my own way. And as I mentioned in the episode, I had an encounter with Saturn way back when, where Saturn manifest. And I went through a lot of things. I'm not going to talk about it right now because I think Peter and I are going to get into it in another conversation. And because we've only really scratched the surface of how many questions I had for Peter, we're going to make this into episode one. And I invite you all to come back to episode two, which we'll be recording again soon. And I'll make announcements about that when it's going to come out. So thank you very much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, pop over to intothemythica.com and have a look at Peter's works and enjoy. Seriously, you will enjoy. If you understand the power of storytelling, and all of us do because we watch stories all the time, Into the Mythica could be something that's right up your alley. So thank you again for Peter for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. If you've listened on your podcast app, give us 5 stars and share the show to somebody you think needs a bit more of a brighter story in their lives. And if you're on YouTube and you have really enjoyed the show too, please like and subscribe. And until next episode, it's bye for now.